Here's some exciting news from our friends at NT Factor. You've heard me talk for years about the natural energy-producing benefits and anti-aging effects of NT Factor's line of nutritional supplements. Well, now those same benefits are available for your pets. Introducing NT Factor Pet Power. It's the first formula to restore the structure and function of cellular membranes in animals, increasing vigor and vitality. By adding NT Factor Pet Power to their food, research has shown that energy loss and other age-related changes in animals were reduced and are delayed after only 8 weeks of daily use. Now your pets can benefit from the same clinically proven formula I use and prescribe to my patients to repair damaged cells and improve your body's natural energy production. Clinical trials have shown that NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it also reduces some of the side effects of aging. With a 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. You can get the NT Factor line of nutritional formulas, including the all-new Pet Power, by calling 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is the author of the book Unsafe at Any Meal. She's an expert on environmental health, and she's very, very well aware of a wide range of environmental toxins that threaten us. That's the theme of today's program. She's bringing us an update because her book, Unsafe at Any Meal, has now been published as an audiobook, and you can purchase Unsafe at Any Meal, the usual sources, Amazon.com, or you can go to SquareOnePublishers.com. Dr. Dufault's name is spelled D-U-F-A-U-L-T, like Dufault. That's pronounced Dufault. Dr. Dufault became a medical laboratory specialist in the U.S. Army, and after a four-year stint, she earned a Bachelor of Science in Environmental Policy Analysis at UC Davis. The gen then served in the Navy as an industrial hygiene officer. Then she transferred to the Public Health Service. She became an environmental health officer there. So deep history in environmental health. She also worked at the National Institutes of Health, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Food and Drug Administration. And she provided expertise in toxicology, environmental health, and industrial hygiene. She is founding executive director of the Food Ingredient and Health Research Institute and collaborates with scientists worldwide to conduct studies and publish papers focusing on the many toxic substances still that unfortunately are present in our food supply. She is a worldwide speaker, numerous articles published in peer-reviewed journals. And so without further ado, here's Dr. Dufault. Dr. Dufault, pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine. I know that we did an initial interview with you when the book first came out a couple of years ago. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for inviting me to come back and provide more information, Dr. Hoffman. I really appreciate it.
Well, indeed. So the big issue that you highlighted while at the FDA was the discovery that mercury was contaminating the plumbing systems of many food manufacturing plants. So even if you have a good plumbing system, and even if you scrupulously avoid those fish that are high in mercury, perhaps you're concerned about your dental fillings, so you've had those removed and replaced with non-mercury-containing fillings. In spite of that, it's coming through to us in the food supply, right?
Right, and it's really not. I discovered mercury in research laboratories, not food manufacturing plants. And the mercury in the research laboratories came from chemicals that are also used by food manufacturing companies. So it's the chemicals that have trace amounts of mercury in them, and the same chemicals are used in manufacturing processed foods. And so the other thing is that certain mercury compounds, like mercuric chloride, for example, is actually used in some manufacturing processes. For example, the cornstarch before they start making it into other products is they apply mercuric chloride to this directly on the starch to kill bacteria that would otherwise, you know, destroy the integrity of the starch. So that's one source of mercury that gets in high fructose corn syrup, as well as the use of sometimes use, you know, there's no way of knowing when they use mercury grade chloralkali chemicals in their process. But for sure, according to the trade journals, the manufacturing journals, they apply the mercuric chloride to the cornstarch at the front end of the process. So the mercury in the corn sweeteners that can then occur as a residue has been documented by numerous scientists. And also the harm that particular ingredient, high fructose corn syrup, does on human metabolism is well documented.
And we tend to think of it because it delivers a high amount of, high glycemic carbohydrate. It's a refined sugar. And so it does a number on our insulin receptors and promotes obesity. But is it possible that some of the harm that is caused by the enormous amounts of high fructose corn syrup that we consume is due to contamination with mercury?
I think the greater harm is the fact that when humans consume high fructose corn syrup, they can that can lead to mineral imbalances. And one USDA scientist looked at adult males, men, humans, and found that the consumption of the high fructose corn syrup could lead to calcium losses, which would then, which is a huge concern as you consume this over time, leading to potential problems like osteoporosis in old age. But calcium is so important in so many bodily functions. In the case of autism, for example, calcium is a fundamental element for creating an enzyme, paraoxonase, which is needed by the body to break down pesticides. So if you're consuming, a lot of high fructose corn syrup, then your body may not be able to break down organophosphate pesticide residues that are found in the food supply. So the mineral losses and imbalances that are created from the consumption of high fructose corn syrup, that's a real issue behind the scenes, underlying issue behind many of these diseases that we get as a result of eating this highly processed diet, diabetes and, heart disease and all that. Calcium is such an important element in so many bodily functions.
Is it fair to say that the presence of mercury conspires with other toxins to amp up their potential to cause harm in the body?
Oh, absolutely. Like, for example, mercury in the blood, inorganic mercury in particular, has been, we did a clinical trial and found that the more processed food you eat, the higher the inorganic mercury in your blood, and also the higher your fasting glucose levels. So that there's a direct connection to, and we also found the same relationship analyzing NHANES data, which was a huge data set. So bottom line is, the processed foods are a source of heavy metals, including mercury, lead, arsenic, and these small exposures over time can accumulate in our blood and in body fluids, in our tissues, brain, and so on, and lead to all sorts of problems later on down the road. And these heavy metals also can suppress important genes and that we need to have operating properly in order to produce the proteins and enzymes that we need.
When you worked at the Food and Drug Administration, you brought this to the attention of your superiors there at powers that be at FDA. How was that received?
Well, first of all, back in those days, which we're talking 17 years ago, nobody knew about epigenetics. They didn't know about gene-environment interactions. So, on face value of just mercury and high fructose corn syrup, they were not alarmed because the law allows a certain amount of mercury, lead, and arsenic in food ingredients. There are certain food ingredients. You go to the Title 21 of the Code of Federal Regulations, which is the Food and Drug Administration's regulations, and it tells you right there how much 10 parts per million lead is allowed in yellow number 5, yellow number 6, and 1 part per million mercury is allowed in those particular food colors, and also 3 parts per million arsenic. And those particular food ingredients are actually made from petroleum that you get from the ground. So the food ingredients, you know, they expect those particular food colors to have heavy metals in them because they come from petroleum, which is, you know, these heavy metals, that's where they are. And so those particular food ingredients were grandfathered in to the food supply before there was even an FDA. So other countries have banned those particular food ingredients. Or in Europe, for example, they have a requirement that if you're going to have yellow 5, yellow 6, red 40, and some other synthetic food colors in your food, then you have to put a warning label on the packaging. And that warning label has to say, may cause hyperactivity and inattention in children. So, you know, we don't have warning labels in our country for the food ingredients that are, you know, have heavy metals in them and are allowed to have heavy metals in them. And we, you know, it just is what it is. We have a different kind of system, economic system here, different kind of way of operating.
Absolutely. It's sort of footloose and fancy free. It's a little bit of a free fire zone, you know, with when it comes to regulation. So you, as someone in the belly of the beast of the FDA, you were there for several years. Ultimately, you made the decision to leave the FDA. Was it out of frustration with the bureaucratic inertia?
Well, I wanted to pursue that line of research because I believed it was going to be causing harm. In the, you know, I just foresaw that, you know, everything I'd read, that there, it wasn't good for consumers, and they didn't want me to publish the finding, and they didn't want me to publish the model that I later published explaining how these heavy metals cause harm to our genes and so on. And all of that's been published now in many, many hundreds of citations. So I was right to retire early. It was important to get that foundational science done so that others, even if it's not in the U.S., but others in the world can follow up on it and do the right things, at least where they're living. And that way the neurodevelopmental aspects of children are, you know, children need to be protected. And, you know, if you want to have healthy birth outcomes and healthy development of children, then you have to have a better food supply. And here in the U.S., we have baby formulas that are comprised predominantly of corn syrup solids and vegetable oils, both of which are known to contain heavy metals. And, you know, that's why Congress just two times in 2021, February of last year and then again in September, released a report saying all the heavy metals in the baby foods, you know. So they know what's going on here in the U.S., and you know, it's just there is no political will to fix the system because the system is designed for the bottom line and it's a free market economy. You know, you could sell whatever you want as long as it doesn't kill anybody in 24 hours.
Right. Is it possible that some people, well, you know, I think you're stating it, you know, very frankly there. Is it possible that some people who have the right kind of genetic makeup may survive the onslaught of these chemicals because not everyone is getting sick, whereas other people who have faulty detoxification pathways or some genetic proclivity to not handling these chemicals well, that those are the ones who are most susceptible?
Well, it's just like with the, you know, getting a virus, right? If you have underlying conditions like, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, whatever, you're more prone to having a worse outcome if there's a virus floating around. And it's the same with any other disease, Western disease. If you have a diet high in processed foods and you're not eating enough of those healthy, whole, you know, very nutritious fruits and vegetables and so on, then you're not getting your body's not getting the crucial micronutrients that it needs in order to operate properly. So what it's getting with a diet high in highly processed foods is an onslaught of heavy metals and pesticides that accumulate over time, and because you're not eating enough of these whole healthy foods. So the key is healthy diet. So if anybody has a healthy diet with the 5 to 7 fruits and vegetables every day, and you know they're staying away from the highly processed foods, then they're going to be less likely to have these underlying conditions and all these diseases that might pop up that are diet related. Now, everybody's got a set of genes and you get what you get, but the only, you know, very few diseases are linked to a given gene in all actuality. You know, we know of some diseases that are caused by definitively by this or that gene, but for the most part, many of the diseases that we are dying from are diet related.
Mm-hmm. And it's about susceptibility. It's about some people may be more susceptible than others. It sounds like, you know, the strategy that you're outlining is to avoid as much as possible exposure to these, unfortunately, ubiquitous agents, some of which are impossible to avoid, but you can minimize your exposure, as well as eating a healthy diet, perhaps taking certain supplements if you need supplementation, to rev your detoxification pathways to help your body better cope with the small amounts of toxins that still kind of get in under the wire.
Right. I just recommend whole foods and organic whenever possible. I don't recommend the use of supplements because I worked at FDA and they're not very well regulated. And so you don't know what you're getting. And if you can garden in the summer and then can your own stuff or when the seasonal fruits and vegetables come out, if you can get them frozen, put them in your freezer and buy farm produce close to you. You know, you just have to have a different strategy for eating. And I think that's the way to do it.
Well, it seems that the nervous system is most exquisitely sensitive to these chemicals. What are some of the disorders that we can link to exposure to environmental chemicals?
Well, we know for sure that Parkinson's and Alzheimer's are related to pesticides. There's lots and lots of, studies out there showing that. And pesticides are definitely neurotoxic. And then we drew the link between the mercury, inorganic mercury from processed foods and diabetes. I mean, nobody's really, there's a 4 or 5 citations now on that paper, but that needs to be investigated more closely. And so that's clearly, it's all about the processed foods there. And then the hypertension, I mean, the Institute of Medicine has talked about it for years, that the sodium chemicals, people think sodium salt, you know, they think salt from the shaker, but there's all these sodium chemicals out there that are in the food supply, and that is the direct cause of hypertension. And Institute of Medicine had come out with that already. And so this year, the one that just passed is the first time FDA has ever listened to Institute of Medicine and said, well, now they're advising, not mandating, but advising food manufacturers to reduce the sodium chemicals. So, I mean,
well, that sounds kind of like weak tea, you know, with advising, you know, kind of like, yeah, but, you know, should you happen to put some of those things in there, we'll let it slide.
Yeah. Well, FDA now has a webpage that's talking about that they know there's heavy metal problem in the food supply. This is the first year they've ever done that.
Oh,
so now at least they're admitting you can't fix a problem until you admit you have one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these competing interests, of course, that are going to beat that down as best that they've beaten down any effort to try to improve the food supply. So, you know, I will see how it goes, but there has to be political will. And the bottom line is, I don't know what's going to happen there.
What about Alzheimer's and dementia? Is there evidence that some of these things are implicated in cognitive decline?
Yes, absolutely. In the environmental health medicine type journals, there's numerous, hundreds, if not thousands of articles showing the link between heavy metals and these development of these diseases, as well as pesticides. So there's absolutely no doubt in it whatsoever.
And at the other end of the age spectrum, there's been a lot of back and forth about mercury-containing vaccines, and, then studies have exonerated them when it comes to the incidence of autism. But still, it's a concern because if it's neurotoxic at one end of the age spectrum, what about sensitive children?
And absolutely. I mean, even the food, like FDA and the Congress, and everyone is shouting right now at the moment about the heavy metals in the foods that children eat. Even the World Health Organization came out and said they want data on the heavy metals in the foods that kids eat. So it's a worldwide problem. And part of it has to do with the manufacturing processes. And the manufacturers are using substances that are known to contain heavy metals and allowed to contain heavy metals, like the, what are you going to do? I mean, these are the secrets that are coming out. And it comes to shelf life, product shelf life. You know, if these heavy metals are toxic to us, they're toxic to bacteria. For example, the chlorine used to bleach flour has allowable lead and mercury. And the mercury-grade chlorine is preferable to, because it has that mercury, because mercury, a little bit of mercury residue in flour from the chlorine is what keeps the mold away. So, lead and paint, that was to prevent mold from painted surfaces. So we know that these heavy metals have a useful, are useful in terms of shelf life or, the prevention of biological growth, whether it be bacterial or mold.
What about cadmium? Some of our guests have pointed out that cadmium is a little recognized environmental toxin that may actually account for higher incidence of hypertension. Also arsenic, we tend to think of arsenic and old lace, like who's trying to poison
right.
me. But, there is arsenic residues in certain foods.
Absolutely.
Potentially at a level
like
to affect metabolism.
Absolutely. I mean, look at here in my book in fourth chapter that talks about heavy metals in caramel, the food coloring caramel. There's 3 parts per million arsenic allowed in there, 10 parts per million lead. And, arsenic's allowed in a lot of things, titanium dioxide, annatto, beta-carotene, carrageenan. And these things aren't allowed in just because they're allowed. They're not allowed across the board for every single ingredient. They're allowed in the ingredients that are expected to have them.
And it's just part of the processing. It's not like they add it, for giggles. It's just part of that highly processed, industrialized chemistry that is required to make these very purified compounds. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, good point at which to pause because we're going to delve further into the issue of environmental toxicity. We're going to talk a little bit about pesticides. An issue that you also talk about in Unsafe at Any Meal. And we're going to talk about solutions. How can you protect yourself from exposure to high levels of some of these things that are ubiquitous, unfortunately, but there are ways to mitigate one's risk. The book is Unsafe at Any Meal. Our guest, Dr. Renee Dufault. If you want to look her up, it's Dufault. Her book's available, of course, at usual places, Amazon.com. Also, you can go to the publisher's website, SquareOnePublishers.com. And there's also, Dr. Dufault, there's now an audiobook available. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, great. So that makes it very accessible to virtually everyone, and I recommend it highly. It's a great book. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.